The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Thursday, Gary, how are you?
I'm doing very, very good. We've got so much to talk about. The legal battle on abortion, which is now coming our way. And I don't mean in the States. I mean, eventually when it reaches the Supreme Court. And that's really the goal of what many of these states are doing. So we'll get to that here in just a couple of moments. The infighting now between James Brennan... John Brennan. John Brennan and James Comey on the dossier. This is really interesting because I will look at yesterday, which was May 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll remember this because May 15th, yesterday, I forgot about this yesterday when I came on the air, but it was my 19th year in Texas. I started in radio.
Congratulations.
In Texas.
Right.
Our anniversary is July 15th for this show, which will be 14 years coming up in July that you and I have, well, not this show, but you
but
and I working together.
Yes, yeah, we don't care what together. They name it. It's just us working together. We're the point, not the name.
I like that.
Yeah.
We're the point, not the name.
Yeah.
Gary McNamara, Eric Harley.
Exactly. We're the point, not the name. Red Eye, whatever.
I'll look at May 15th and say, was that the day everything changed? Because I've been busy all this week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been just, maybe it's because it's spring cleaning and, you know, summer's coming up and I know I'm going to be busy doing other things, but it's like I haven't stopped. I mean, I wake up in the morning, work, housework, everything all day. And while I'm doing it on my phone constantly, which is the beauty of smartphones, by the way, you can do show prep for a talk show 24/7, mm-hmm. which in this day and age is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably, I don't know, maybe it was about 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I just went, everything's changed.
Yeah.
Everything's changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, wow, this is a benchmark. This is the point where it's not Trump-Russia collusion anymore. Now you've got Comey saying it was Brennan, Brennan saying it was Comey when it comes to who, legitimized the dossier. And I just went, whoa. And then you had the other story that came out yesterday where on Fox, where former FBI General Counsel James Baker said this week that he and other officials were quite concerned that former FBI Director James Comey appeared to be blackmailing then-President-elect Trump during the 2017 meeting regarding salacious allegations found in the Steele dossier. Can I use the word?
What?
May 15th was a bombshell day.
Yeah, bombshell.
Because
bombshell.
We had, I don't know, hundreds of bombshells.
We need deep voice guy to say bombshell.
Concerning Trump-Russia collusion, but
yeah,
bombshell.
It's a Red Eye Radio bombshell.
It's
a nothing burger. It's
either
one of the
a bombshell or a nothing burger. We will look back at May 15th, 2019, a few years from now, and ask that question. Was it a bombshell or a nothing burger?
Do you ever get through the drive-thru, you know, after you pull out of the drive-thru, you get home and you get out your nothing burger and you discover there's no there? That's a bombshell.
Well, it would be a bombshell. No, I've never done that.
It is, I think, quite possibly one of the turning points, because here's what I noticed. Here's what hit me first. Remember when the report came out and we learned about who had signed off on the FISA warrants, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? And we learned the dossier. And remember how the Democrats were playing it down. Oh, no, 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 no. The dossier really wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that, you know, okay, then why did you include it? Yeah, but it wasn't that big of a deal. But it made the difference. It's the difference between that petition and the application from earlier in the summer. You didn't have the dossier attached to the first application for that warrant, which was not approved. And the second one that was approved in October had the dossier attached to it. So it must mean something.
Well, now
right. you have Brennan and Comey basically trying to throw each other under the bus as to who was pushing the legitimacy of the dossier. So now they're saying it was important. Now they're admitting that the dossier was part of the whole application, an important part of that application.
I think one of the things that happened was when, because I'm sure this went around Washington, when you had, for example, a Byron York's column, Washington Examiner, mm-hmm. where he went through point by point the redacted, what we know, you know, the specifics in the redacted FISA application.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot look at that, you know, redacted version and come to any conclusion except that the dossier was everything that they had. Now, we said there are two pages. There are redactions that were done. For example, two pages that were completely out that were along that same line of the dossier. But those who have seen it, the Republicans state, that's even going to make it look worse. That if you think the redacted version was bad, the unredacted version is a lot worse. Well, you look at that, as we did the other day, when York pointed that out, and you go through the redacted version of that dossier, you look at that and you say, that's not enough to get a secret warrant.
Right.
That wouldn't be enough as far as that wouldn't be enough to get a regular warrant.
Right.
And so I did like Andrew McCarthy yesterday, you know, talking about, you know, Brennan criticizing the new review of the Russian probe. He goes, why? Why? Look, in the court system, regular warrants are reviewed all the time, right? You always look and a search warrant is done. And you go to court, and the defense lawyers will challenge the search warrant all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In our system, you get to review the search warrant.
Yes.
Why is Brennan worried about it? If they do this all the time, and this is their practice, and they're experts at it, and so as Comey told us, I mean, the review that is done in order to get a secret warrant is so intense, and the evidence must be completely legitimate across the board because this is a secret warrant and we must protect the Constitution of the United States, then what are you worried about?
Right.
What's the worry?
Right.
In the regular law enforcement world, search warrants, our surveillance warrants, search warrants, they're reviewed all the time. They have to be reviewed because when you go to court, that's the first thing the defense lawyer is going to look at. What was the probable cause to get the search warrant? Well, judge, throw that out.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, you've got Brennan who doesn't want this investigation going on. Why? If it's legit. Look, it's the same thing that we said about the Mueller report. Even though there were, as we know, it was loaded with Hillary Clinton supporters on that. I don't think anybody is debating that whatsoever. A lot of those lawyers were Hillary Clinton supporters, and they still couldn't find anything on Trump because eventually you have to go. Doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. You've got to eventually take that to federal court, and you've got to sit before a judge, and you've got to justify those things before a judge. The reason that Mueller didn't do anything on obstruction of justice is because he knew he would be embarrassed if he took that to federal court.
Right.
And put that in front of a federal judge. So, look, it's the evidence that determines it. Put it out before the people.
Mm-hmm.
Let the people see it. So we'll get to that coming up here also. Where does the president go on immigration, not illegal immigration, but immigration, hence coming out of the White House where they want to go on legal immigration. And we want all of our Democrat friends to, and liberals friends to understand there is a difference between legal immigration and illegal immigration.
Yes.
When we talk immigration here, this is legal immigration.
Mm-hmm.
When we wish to talk illegal immigration, we'll say illegal immigration.
Yes.
So let's go over that again. Illegal immigration is one thing. Mm-hmm. Legal immigration is a separate thing. We know you like to put that all into one little neat, tidy word of immigration, but we can't do that because you lose accuracy when you do that.
Temporarily displaced travelers does not apply.
Good news. This is something we've pushed, I don't know, for decades. Mm. The White House to push for transparency on health care prices. Bill de Blasio to announce today.
All right.
And I think after the governor of Montana, that now makes 23.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Well, they officially now have in the Democratic Party more people running for president than there are accusers of Joe Biden. So that's a milestone, I think.
San Diego bans homeless from living and sleeping in vehicles. We'll get to that. We'll tell you how a CEO says he will save $1 million. The U.S. and Iran and a whole bunch more, plus your calls and comments. And how about some Trey Gowdy?
You know, by the way, just want to remind our audience, because we talked about how Comey speaks and how it's just weird when he talks. Listen to the tone and the words of Trey Gowdy. Because I thought to myself, well, I could see a Trey Gowdy being FBI director, federal prosecutor. You know, he's a former prosecutor. I can see him when he talks, he uses the language. It's not code. It's legal language. And Comey talked like, I don't know, somebody who was about to write a book when he was on Capitol Hill. And guess what? That's exactly what he did. And I just want to point that out. So when you hear Trey Gowdy this morning on the program, just listen to the language that he uses.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guy who speaks the language.
Oh, by the way, we got a, I don't know if you got it. Was it an email or a tweet? I believe it was an email from a gentleman who works in federal law enforcement.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah, right.
Did you get that one?
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, okay. I mean, but it was just, it was great. He says, you know, you guys are talking about why different candidates are running. And, you know, for example, you know, what Joe Biden wants to get out of all of this. And he said, well, you know. And I started thinking to myself, well, this guy has an investigative mind. You're starting to think, okay, what would be the motivation? He said, to hide all the stuff from Ukraine.
Right, exactly.
It's like, wow. Now, that's an investigator's mind.
Right, yeah. He's doing it to get out of the way of an investigation, right?
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, if I'm president, I can squash it.
Exactly, right. Unless you're Trump, apparently. You can. And when it's nothing and you're Trump, it's impossible to squash it.
Oh, and did you see Jonathan Turley yesterday in front of the House Judiciary Committee?
Yeah,
saying that that if the Democrats look, this is the Democrats on William Barr, you know, a contempt of Congress. He said, don't go down that road.
Mm.
The precedent isn't behind you for anything. He sat there and said, and what you're doing is you're holding what you wish to do is you wish to hold somebody in contempt of court for not breaking the law.
Right.
He said, don't go down. You're in for a world of hurt if you bring that before the D.C. court. You bring that before the federal judges, you get that thrown back in your face. What are you doing? You can't. Remember, that was in part of the confirmation hearing, too.
Right, yeah.
Where they brought that up. Will you release the entire unredacted? You know, as if we won't confirm you to be attorney. Think about this. The Democrats said,
well,
we won't confirm you to be attorney general. We may balk at confirming you to be attorney general if you won't tell us up front in front of witnesses that you will break the law.
That's right out of the left playbook.
I know. And they were upfront about it.
Well, I mean, look at the disrespect for the process during the Kavanaugh hearings. That was, if you think about it, that's what really sent Lindsey Graham over the brink. But you and I talked about it. It's the lack of respect for the law and the process. They don't care. And they all believe that they can change the rules and the laws with a subpoena. And you cannot.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. What's going on in a number of states when we look at the abortion laws coming out is no surprise whatsoever. After Kavanaugh got on the bench, you knew this was going to happen. Look, you've seen the same thing go on where the left tests the Heller decision constantly, right, yeah, you know, right, when we talk about the Second Amendment.
Right.
So even though it was probably a great relief to many conservatives when the Heller decision came down and the Second Amendment was finally interpreted after hundreds, for the first time, you know, ever, mm-hmm, was interpreted as being an individual right. Still, how many states continue to test it and how many states continue to try to find some way? Okay, we'll make ammunition. You know, we'll tax the daylights out of ammunition. Mm-hmm. We'll tax the daylights out of guns. We'll zone it where guns can't be sold anywhere but these particular areas, and nobody wants to put a gun shop there. You know, there's a ton of different things that states will try to do. We all knew this was coming. And I don't think anybody didn't figure this was coming when Kavanaugh went on board, because many people believe that Roe v. Wade is terrible law, which, by the way, I'm one of them. I believe it's a terrible law. And it gets down to the court legally eventually having to decide when does life begin.
Right.
Which brings us to a whole bunch of different legal questions. I saw that Pat Robertson yesterday doesn't like the bill. I don't know if you saw that.
Mm, yeah,
he doesn't like the Alabama bill.
Right.
He feels that, you know, saying that you can't have an abortion even with rape and incest goes too far, and he doesn't think that will pass the court.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Pat Robertson saying that, in my opinion, is that if you determine legally that it is a life, you blow your entire argument disappears if you say, well, it's a human life that must be protected except in rape and incest.
Right.
Well, you can't say the Supreme Court is eventually going to have to decide what is a human life as we become more technically advanced. And
yes,
by the way, science is what has really changed a lot of people's mind on abortion.
Right.
You're eventually going to have to make that decision, the Supreme Court, that it is a life. Well, if it is a life, your argument goes away if you say, except for, you know, for rape and incest, mm-hmm, abortion would be allowed.
Right.
Well, then it's not a human life, because you can't take a human life if it's a human life.
Right. Yeah, it's either a life or not. And that really is getting down to the, I think, redefining or possibly turning things around completely. And where will the high court go on that, I guess, is the question. And you're absolutely right. It's either a life or it's not.
Right.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Precipitation that came onshore in the west yesterday as rain is developing as snow in the upper elevations of the Sierras throughout the day. And as we get into Friday, that's as much as 2 feet of snow expected in the California mountains above 6,000 feet. We will see rain and snow impact much of the Intermountain West over the next 24, 48 hours. Salt Lake City just on track to receive some rain. Same for Cheyenne, Wyoming, as daytime and overnight temperatures are too warm to support snowfall there. Denver, 88 today, and an overnight low of 53. Will not see more than rainfall in the Mile High City. Most of the southern third of the country over the next 24 hours will remain dry. That includes flooded areas of Texas and the lower Mississippi Valley as clear skies and warmer temperatures enter the picture. 86 and sunny in Dallas. Thunderstorms for Chicago, high 75. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Conservatives. Feel free to heckle them. Gary McNamara and Eric Hartley on Red Eye Radio.
He just heckled us.
He's Irk Herman. I'm Gary McNamara.
I know. Okay,
on,
fine.
On the entire abortion issue, there are so many. Everybody goes down a different path on it, and nobody ever gets to the legal point that eventually is going to have to be made on abortion. And I saw it yesterday again. You know, men can't speak on it. You know, that the men were the ones that the majority of men are the ones that are voting in order to control a woman's body. All right. We hear that. We hear a woman's reproductive rights. By the way, I think it was Britt Hume who said, isn't that interesting, the words they use, reproductive rights? This isn't about reproductive rights.
Right.
None of it's about reproductive rights.
It's quite the opposite.
Right, exactly. It's the opposite of what they actually, of what they say. So, I mean, that debate went on. But what it gets down to, what will it'll eventually get down to, and science has led us to this point, is when does a human life begin? It's that simple. You know, you and I were having a discussion. You know, the Georgia law, the heartbeat law. Well, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, heartbeat. Are you just throwing that out because it's more of a restrictive abortion law? Because you eventually want to get, you know, that it begins with the fertilization of the egg? Because when you get down to science, because that, you know, again, it got into it. The debate yesterday got into everything. Then men should be put in prison for the rest of their life if they masturbate. I mean, that's where the debate got yesterday on social media. Science is eventually going to get to the point, and I believe that science will get to the point that it is when the egg is fertilized. If they do get to that point, all the other arguments go away. You know, you mentioned during the bottom of the hour when you were talking, you said, look, the morning after pill goes away.
Right.
At that particular point. Because once the court decides that, you know, when the fetus is a human being, every other argument disappears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a woman's right to control her own body at that point legally disappears. Because if it is a human being at that point, it doesn't matter whether you're in the womb or it doesn't matter whether you're 50 years old. It's judged the same way. And that's why when I saw Pat Robertson yesterday come out and state he thinks it's a bad law because he believes this law won't pass court review. I said, well, I'm not sure. He didn't fully explain it, except for the fact that the pressure would be on the court to say, wait a minute, you can't say a woman can't have an abortion if it's rape or incest, and that would be the pressure. Well, that's the emotional argument. That isn't the scientific argument. The scientific argument, when it gets down to the point of the scientific argument, once that decision is made, you know, I don't know how else you eventually judge that issue, except based on what science tells us, because then anything is arbitrary. I mean, look at all the different definitions that have come out of, you know, when a fetus is actually a human being.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so that's it. It's interesting to take a look at Roe v. Wade, where the argument was a fetus, which is 8 weeks after conception, is when it becomes a fetus, when the major structures in the body, it goes from the embryo stage to fetus stage at 8 weeks. All right. What about before that?
Well, that's one of the reasons I view Roe v. Wade as bad law.
Yeah, that's the medical definition, you know, and so the medical, it, is the medical definition the same as the legal definition? And who decides that? So I guess there's it. You know, I know the liberals really, Kavanaugh was all about this. This is what this was about. Alabama, this is intended to get to the highest court. That's why this came about.
And so
I understand that, but we really do have to get down to the definition of what a person is. And that's where, again, my question would be, okay, the medical community has said this. Medically, fetus, 8 weeks and older. But is it a person before?
Well, the medical community in 1971.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is still the standard because no one's changed it, but there
exactly.
wasn't a reason
right.
to right. change it.
Right.
Right? So... And for them, but it's a different purpose. In the medical community, I'm not talking about abortion doctors, but in the medical community, when a mother becomes pregnant, and she often, you know, is aware of it, you know, about that stage, it varies. But I mean, certainly by about 8 weeks or so, you start to know, if not much sooner for some. With four children and eight grandchildren, I've been through it a few times, not firsthand, to be clear. I didn't make history. Remember that in the UK? The first man to give birth. No.
Oh.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. But the whole idea is, I know, but the whole idea is to have that defined. But here's my question. The legal definition, is it different than the medical, or should it be different than the medical definition? And who decides it? I am staunchly pro-life. I'm talking about the legal back and forth and how this play out.
Yeah.
And
right.
during the process, what you're going to hear, forget about the picket signs, forget about the protesters, forget about either side of that. Again, I'm strong pro-life. I'm talking about getting into the law itself. I don't have the answers. To me, it's a life from that very first stage, the moment that egg is fertilized.
Right.
That I'm not going to waver from that. My question is, what will the discussion be in the courts?
But that's where the political and emotional pressure comes in.
Right.
Because I think what Pat Robertson was indicating yesterday was if you are rape and it's incest, mm-hmm. that woman goes through absolute hell.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not only during the rape portion of it,
right?
But then having to go through the entire process up until labor of delivering that child,
right?
Which has to be unimaginably emotionally damaging.
Yes,
understand that completely. I don't think there's anybody who couldn't understand that. The point that I was making earlier, the legal point is, if the courts eventually decide, and they will, and I do believe the definition, you know, will change from what 1971 said, and I believe it's, you know, science will do that, and, you know, what makes up a human being, and mm-hmm. the DNA, and all that, and I do believe that there will be a court in the future that will say it does begin when the egg is fertilized.
Right.
If that happens, nothing else matters.
Right,
because at that point,
if it's determined that it is a person, a human life, then the law will be you can't take that human life.
Look, part of the debate on end of life except when there's no brain signals, which I think the majority, if you're being kept alive by machines and you have no brain activity,
right.
I think the consensus of society is that is the end of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why so many people put together the, you know, the end of, what do they call it? The end of life wills.
Mm-hmm.
What do they call it? I forgot.
Living will.
Living will. That's mm-hmm. why people put together living wills.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they say is, really the debate is, there's a point where society can't decide it. You know, we don't know, so you get to, at that point in your life, when you are so close to death or being kept alive by machines or whatever, that you can refuse it. But if you're being kept alive at the end of your life by machines, the question would then come up, well, what, you're being kept alive by another human being. If that other human being is gone, you die.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can make that same case 5 minutes out of the womb.
Right. Yeah.
So it gets down to, the question will eventually get down to what is life. But when Pat Robertson said that, I went, well, you may make your case weaker in the courts. When Pat Robertson came out and said, look, I think the Alabama law goes too far, and the reason I say that, and I understand, I don't think his point is that he is pro-choice. I think the point he was making is the fact that if you wish to restrict more abortions, you can, and you can keep moving in that direction, but if you go to the point of saying, no, you can't have, you know, that you can't have an abortion after rape and incest, well, the courts just won't pass that.
Right.
Well, I think the courts may look at it and say, well, wait a minute, you're claiming everything is a human life. If everything is a human life, it doesn't matter whether it's a rape. It doesn't matter whether it's incest. It's a human life, and that human life and the preservation of that human life is the number one goal and interest of society.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may say your argument is weak to be, you know, your argument, that argument that the exception should be there proves that you don't believe that it's a human life.
Right. That either applies or it doesn't. It is yes or no. And it will be fascinating to hear what the court has to say, what the hearings will be like, what the arguments will be. Because it really comes down to that. And if they determine that the definition of a fetus or the definition of a person is at conception, that changes pretty much everything. Certainly overturns Roe v. Wade. But the question is, who decides that? And what is it based on?
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, Bill de Blasio is going to announce later on today that he's running for president of the United States.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
All right, Mr. Mayor. Another mayor.
Another mayor.
Yeah.
Of a little bigger city than, for example.
Yeah.
South Bend.
Yeah, right, yeah. A little bit. It has a few more people. We talked about this, I think it was last week, because the rumors started hitting pretty hard that he was going to announce soon, de Blasio. And we picked through it and said, you know, you've got, in this case, what, 22 others that are running, and then here we are, halfway through May, he announces. He has to be saying to himself, this is how it works. America wants me, needs me to be president.
Yes, exactly. You, by the way, I'm laughing because you have to think that way.
That's the way you have to think.
I'm running because I can offer something to America that none of these other 22 can offer.
Right.
And the president, too.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. These 22 and then the president, 23. Those 23 people can't offer what I can.
Right.
Which is?
Which is what? What is it? You have to bring something to the table. Unlike Biden, who just has to wave and dismiss things.
Just be at the table.
Exactly.
To bring anything.
Exactly. I'm here. I don't know. That's a foreign thought to me. Very foreign to think that way. I guess we'll hear from de Blasio and what he wants to do, his agenda. How will it differ from the other 22 is the question.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right. So it seemed to be a quiet day on the China trade war yesterday, but in reality, it was not. It was an extremely interesting day yesterday as Steve Mnuchin made it known, the Treasury Secretary, that they are close to dropping the steel and aluminum tariffs.
That's a big deal.
You and I said that would have eventually happen. The president had promised to do it once they signed the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, and we had talked about this yesterday, that the White House was going to make a decision on auto tariffs with Europe on Friday. That has also been delayed. You and I both stated yesterday we wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't moved back.
Right.
Because the last thing you want to do, look, the White House saw what happened. I don't care. The president could be out there promoting tariffs are the greatest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said, that's why I said the other day, he's not telling his most loyal supporters the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because he understands the tariffs hurt. They don't help. And you see now in the movement of the White House over the last 24 hours that they clearly understand and the president clearly understand that tariffs are not this great thing that helps the economy. And they aren't something that the other side pays and we get a free lunch on it.
Right.
And so, you know, we get a lot of flack whenever we talk tariffs about the president. We don't care. We're right on it. Economics isn't an opinion. Economics is how people respond to incentive. You raise the cost of doing business, it hurts the economy. If you believe otherwise, then you're no better than the Democrats stating that raising the minimum wage helps an economy.
Yep.
And so the flack really doesn't. You know, we don't get as much flack as we used to, but we still get a few people. But over the last last week, we've had the most loyal, more populist Trump supporters who are totally all tariff and for the president because of tariffs. We had to explain to both of those people who called up extremely optimistic that the president was pro-tariff, and at the end, not so excited anymore about what the president was doing, because mm-hmm. as we stated all along, the president is telling his most loyal supporters one thing at rallies and everything else, that tariffs are great and we're finally getting back at the Chinese and tariffs are good and we're getting the money and China is hurting. And we said the United States is hurting too, because if that's not what the president is. The president seems to be telling his most loyal supporters that the negotiating point, the negotiation of the tariffs, using that as a negotiating hammer is what actually is going to be in the free trade agreement, and that is not the case. As we talked yesterday in the Wall Street Journal, made note of it, that the things that even the administration wishes to get done, which is for China to remove subsidies, to open up more to the American marketplace, for China not to be stealing or demanding intellectual property in order to do business with them, that those are the things that really American business is interested in, even the administration, and that's what they're looking for. They're not looking to protect American industries in these actual trade deals.
No.
Little things here and there. I saw yesterday on social media somebody posted, well, we had a strike back in Canada because of the 300% tariff on dairy. As we've said, there were very little tariffs between it. That was one little protection that was there for whatever it was, 200, 300, I forgot what it was, the tariff on some dairy products over a certain level. But the United States does the same thing to Canada on tobacco. So everybody's taking these small, little, really insignificant parts of the trade agreement and blowing them up into being the major points of dispute, and they're not. The Canada Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and the United States is for the most part, when it comes to tariffs, identical to NAFTA. There are other changes to update technology and protect, you know, intellectual property. The only thing that the president really promoted was the fact that and this is the bad thing about the new NAFTA, the USMCA, is he raised the cost of doing business or raised the cost of making a car in the United States, in Mexico, and in Canada. And he promoted that for a while as a good thing, when it's not a good thing. We may never see that because USMCA may never be passed with that in it. But for the most part, 98% of it's exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
The president is not trying. Many of his supporters, and we know because we hear from them, believe that the president in the trade deal is attempting to even out the trade imbalance. That's not what's in the trade deals. And it's amazing the number of people who believe that. And for us, it became reminiscent of Ron Paul back 10 years ago when we had to correct all of their supporters that said, well, Ron Paul's not a free trader. He's against NAFTA. And we had explained to him, no, Ron Paul is the biggest free trader. He doesn't want any type of agreements. He just wants people in one country to be able to trade with whomever they want worldwide without any rules or any regulations put forth by any government. We had Ron, the most loyal Ron Paul supporters, furious at us. No, it isn't. Yeah, you better go check it. You better understand the number one issue that you're voting for a candidate. You better understand where they actually stand on it. Now, the president has been different as that he has been promoting tariffs on a consistent basis as the way to have trade with another country to protect your own interest. That's not what he's doing in the trade agreements that he negotiated with Canada, Mexico, and now China. That's not what's in those agreements. Now, we're happy with that. We don't understand why the president is not being honest with his most loyal supporters.
You know, we've talked about what the effect on the markets might be. If you saw the steel and aluminum tariffs go away and a deal with China done, you get to that by, I don't know, August 1st. A conservative estimate, I think, based on the fact that we don't know if any meeting planned before the G20 summit between Xi and Trump. But imagine they get a deal done by the end of summer. The markets will rally as a result of that, but there will be long-term growth that we were seeing in that first year.
Yes. Yeah.
That the first year of Trump's presidency in 2017 and a good part of 2018. So if Mnuchin, here's the difference between Mnuchin saying it and Trump saying it. The president says it. It might happen and it might not. It's unpredictable because you don't know. It's been back and forth. If Mnuchin says it, if he says they're close to a deal, I tend to put a little more weight or close to lifting the tariffs on steel and aluminum, and they could be getting to a deal with China soon or anything like that. I put more weight into it. I don't think he has any reason to say that otherwise. I don't think there's any motivation to say that unless it's accurate. And I don't know how long it's going to take. It's taking a lot longer than most people thought. Remember, the whole deal with China was going to be done by end of March. They wanted to get it done. They really wanted to get it done
right
by the end of the first quarter.
Well, I hope it is also a change in the White House, because we have said we believe that the president made a tactical error.
Mm-hmm.
Our trade enemies was never Canada, was never Mexico,
right,
and was never Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of isolating the United States with those countries, we should have been isolating China. We should have been actively promoting with Europe, who also trades with Asia, you know, with the European Union and Canada and Mexico, to band together to form a huge trade bloc with each other and use that clout in order to go after China and not do it alone. Maybe that's where the president now is going. That would be a good thing if they were going there. But but obviously, announcing yesterday, look, this is, but believe me, this is all tactical. Announcing yesterday that they're close to a deal to drop the aluminum and steel tariffs. It really didn't make a lot of news, did it?
No.
It really was,
no.
I'm thinking to myself, that's huge news that Mnuchin's saying that they're close to a deal to drop the steel and aluminum tariffs. And they have delayed the decision on whether to have tariffs on European vehicles. Now, many people believe it's not really a tariff on European vehicles that they're concerned with. It's agriculture. It's opening up the markets in Europe to American agriculture is what they truly want. And that point of just hanging that out there is to open up the markets in Europe, which would be a good thing. But there doesn't have to, in these, especially with the modern Western countries who understand free trade, there really didn't ever have to be this angst going on between the White House and our friendly allies who we can have a huge trading bloc with and go after the ones that are cheating, like China, but do it in unison. And I hope that's where the White House is going. I don't know if they're going in that direction, but what they're doing signals to me that they wish to lessen the tensions, the trade tensions,
mm-hmm,
between Canada, Mexico, and Europe, which is a good thing. That's the first step to get where I believe that they should get.
Right. Yeah. And I think right now, especially with the Brexit that's apparently never going to happen. Seriously, what the heck, man?
The Brexit that never happened.
It's not going to happen. It's going to be a children's book. The Brexit that never happened. But if it did happen, there's great consideration. If it doesn't happen, there's great consideration, because Europe, a massive, collectively, the European nations, a massive trade partner.
Yeah.
And there has to be... Here's what I think they're looking at. It's not just, I know the president is focused on domestic stuff, which is great. Agree or disagree with the tactics, we can have that discussion, and we've had it in recent
right
minutes. But the point is that there's also consideration, not for the global economy so much, but a great global economy indicates a healthy trade environment and is positive for the U.S. That's the whole point.
My only criticism of the president is based on the fact that I want him to win in 2020.
Yeah. Yes.
And so when I say, you know, as you and I have said, you know, tell the truth to your most loyal supporters. Keep that base together. tell them, look, this is what I'm doing and I'm using this. You know, I think most of them understand it. Maybe the pure populists don't, but you haven't lost your base, even though you didn't do what you told them you were going to do with Canada and Mexico. All you've got to say is the GDP is up and they're behind you.
Yeah. A strong economy. Again,
right, strong
does
economy,
all the
right.
heavy lifting
so,
for
so
you.
So
yeah.
don't even get to the point of anywhere close to doing anything that might alienate your base. That's my concern. It's not anti-Trump that I don't want Trump in there. It's I want there is no other choice but Trump for 2020. None. And that's where my frustration with this administration has come in times because, you know, again, you know, you and I talked about the fact that if the economy goes, can anybody beat Trump? I don't really think they can. But still, I'm of the philosophy that you have, because we've talked about it.
Yes.
You always believe you're the underdog.
You plan as if you're going to lose. You plan as if the polls are all working against you right now.
Right.
You do everything you can to win. And if it's a landslide, great.
Well, we were wondering on Monday, where are we going?
Right.
Is it going to be a trade war with China? Is it going to be a trade war again with Canada and Mexico if we don't drop the aluminum and steel tariffs? Is there going to be a trade war with this coming Friday coming up with the European Union because of auto? There's a whole difference between having semi-trade war, because it's not with everything, but a semi-trade war with China and a trade war between China, Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. That's a whole different ballgame, because you're probably talking about 20% of the U.S. economy that's affected, because roughly our GDP is two-thirds of domestic and one-third worldwide. So if you take China, Canada, our biggest trading partners, China, Canada, Mexico, the European Union, and you're in a trade war with all of them in 1 week. You know, Monday you're saying, man, something's got to move, and it did. Something is moving now.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Right.
And so it's a good sign.
And from here, I think the president can promote, look, everybody knows we will not just talk the talk, we'll walk the walk. I don't have any empty threats. So we got deals done, and then you get right back to it. You get back to trade. You get back to a great economy.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on inspections. Odds increase that you'll be pulled over for a roadside inspection during CVSA's annual International Road Check, June 4th through the 6th. Standard inspections will include a comprehensive examination of the vehicle and all required documentation. Each year, CVSA places a special emphasis on one area of the vehicle or driver. This year, the focus is on steering and suspension systems. But don't stop there. Be sure that everything is ready to go. Remember that before you hit the road, you must be satisfied that basic parts and accessories are in good working order. Making sure the vehicle is in operating shape before leaving helps reduce the chances of discovering dangerous issues when it's too late. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us on jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All good news. Steve Mnuchin coming out and saying a deal close to scrap the Mexico and Canada steel and aluminum tariffs, which we knew would eventually happen, and also the decision on tariffs on European automobiles. Is being delayed. I think it's the absolute right move for the White House to go down this path. You could not come out of this week with the escalation of the trade war with China and escalate it with the European Union and Canada and Mexico. You had to put out the signal that we're willing to deal.
Right. Yes.
And they did. And we're willing to with that. We're not going to close up our markets. We didn't really in the as we pointed out in the Mexico and Canada free trade agreement. And I don't know why the president was holding on to the steel tariffs. I don't know what the purpose of it was, unless he believes it would help him in Pennsylvania.
If they're not off the rails, they're off on a tangent. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Hey, we podcast the program, ran into a guy, actually, a technician for an air conditioner company that came over to do the summer tune-up at my house, Peter. Thank you for all the great work today. Listens to the podcast. I run into so many people on the road, too, that came up to me and said, man, I check out your podcast because I'm not always up at night.
I got that at the airport the other day from one of our listeners.
Yeah.
Who came up to me, who recognized me.
And so it's great. We love our podcasters. Thank you for doing that. The show is available on demand whenever you're ready to listen to it. You can go to redeyeradioshow.com. It's available on Apple iTunes. It's available on Google Podcasts. Just, again, you can Google Red Eye Radio Podcast. Also, the Extra Mile. I'm hanging out with people from the trucking industry and talking about a lot of great issues, things we're going to be covering soon, a very big announcement related to the St. Christopher Truckers Relief Fund, a great organization that I'm proud to sit on the board for. And that announcement is coming in just a few days. So watch for the Extra Mile announcement on that. Also, some CVSA Road Check 2019 details coming soon as we get with our friends from J.J. Keller to get all the details on that. What is Road Check? It is happening in early June, as it does every year. What is it all about? What do you need to know? Drivers will fill you in on the Extra Mile. It's available again, redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast.
You know, I don't know if this had anything to do with the White House and their decision, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, to announce that they're close to a deal to scrap the steel and aluminum tariffs, and then delay the decision on the European automobile tariffs, but CNBC announcing, I was reading the CNBC article before that said that the Atlanta Fed, not that they have a lot of credibility after what they predicted for the first quarter, but the Atlanta Fed has dropped what they believe the second quarter GDP growth rate will be to 1.1%. Now, again, I looked at that with a grain of salt and said, well, you guys were so off last time. And who knows? You never know what the final GDP will be, but it's not going to be 0.3
The first quarter, right?
For the first quarter, it's 3.2 is what the first reading of it is. We'll see what the updated numbers are for the first quarter. Their group of economists that they poll has dropped it to 2%. So the GDP growth for the second quarter,
right?
From the first quarter growth that was 3.2, they say it'll be down to 2.0. This president needs a smoking economy. If he's got a smoking economy, and then with the news coming out yesterday, which is just, to me, neither of these stories, by the way, got much airplay or much press, even in the conservative media. Fox covered the one on the bombshell of Brennan and Comey going after each other, which is, you know, just changed the direction of everything that we have been talking about over the last 2 years. But nobody really covered. The Hill did. I saw it on the Hill.com covered the fact that Mnuchin is dropping the steel, or they're very close to a deal to drop the steel and aluminum tariffs, and very few people had the story of delaying the decision on the European auto tariffs, which is huge because it shows that the White House, because that's the one thing with the mixed messages coming, and I mean hugely mixed messages, which, as you probably can figure out, ticked me off earlier this week because I just don't understand sometimes sometimes why the president does what he does when he has the country behind him. But it shows that they are worried about GDP. And I don't know whether the new projections and the economic figures that were put out on CNBC, that I'm sure the White House gets a hold of them and they say, look, because consumer spending was down for April.
Right.
I mean, that's a concern.
Yeah. Yep.
And when consumer spending is down, that's 2/3 of your GDP. So consumer spending down for April. And so there is a concern inside the White House. And if the president has come to the realization that GDP is more important than trade imbalances, the president has come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can get the GDP growth growing now throughout next year, and we see, and we'll get to it in just a moment, where this Obama-Clinton Russia collusion is going in the opposite direction. Mark Cuban said it when we played the audio yesterday from Mark Cuban. No Democrat can beat him because they're all politicians. They're all politicians who sound like politicians. And if the economy is going, where do you go? I mean, it was weak. When was it? When the GDP numbers came out of 3.2%. Now, look. People like us can look at it and say, the GDP numbers are not the most accurate way to view what's going on in an economy. You can look at, for example, durable goods and things like that. Are we actually producing actual things? And the GDP, in our opinion, I don't want to get into the deep minutiae of it, but we believe that the transfer of money sometimes is viewed too highly and government spending is viewed too highly in the GDP that can throw off your numbers. But over the long run, the GDP does give you an indication of where the economy is going and a pretty good indication. If you were to ask me what the percentage is, I'd say it's about 70% accurate as to where we're going in the economy. Therefore, if you have 3 or 4% growth consistently, you're doing really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been doing really good over the last year. The president can keep that up. And we saw the argument that they were throwing at it. Well, the economy's going good, but how many people are making living? Is it a living wage? That disappeared after like about a day.
Yeah, it's because when you look at the unemployment rate and you look at most major metro areas, what's going on right now, and that's, the hiring and how many jobs are available, how many companies are going through a decent time, not necessarily tremendous growth in each case, but they are showing positive signs. There are some that are hurting right now, that being farming, trucking, if manufacturing is down, hurts. And so they're, you run into those lulls, but get the tariffs off the table, and what do you have? You have a 2017 all over again.
Well,
and 2017, and the messaging is going to be important when those tariffs are lifted. Because it not only has to repair what, any damage that's been done by the tariffs, but it also has to ensure that give motivation to people, to industry, to make long-term investment. And you have to do that by reinstilling the confidence that that's not going to be revisited, especially in a second term for the president. Again, we wanted to win in November of next year. But in order to do that, you have to build that confidence in those industries that did suffer, that this is, you've made your point on tariffs and you're done. That it's not going to be a tactic in your second term. And I think that's going to, that has to be important. That has to be done. The communication has to be done for your political purpose, for your campaign, but it also has to be done for the economy to really make that investment. Industry is going to have to see that they can do that and those trade routes are fully established. And when that happens, then you'll see that investment. And really, I don't know, and we don't make predictions, but it's going to be, when you have that kind of steady growth, what we were seeing, the signs we were seeing in 2017 were positive. Very encouraging.
If you drop the steel tariffs, if you don't get into the trade war with the European Union, and if you progress further in friendly relations with China, and as we brought up, that the one point that's being missed, we brought it up the other day, an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal. A gentleman made the same case that we made, that what people don't realize is if you get a deal where China drops the subsidies, because the subsidies, people think that the government can make an economy go by giving industry subsidies. You don't. You make them inefficient and you make them unproductive. And as we pointed out, if the president would be giving the greatest gift to the Chinese people, maybe not the government, because there would be an expansion of wealth, but long term, if China does a deal with the United States to drop the subsidies, to not be stealing intellectual property, that's when you get more business investment in your country. And there will be more business investment. There will be more United States business investment if, in a trade agreement, American companies know that their property is protected while in China, whether it's intellectual property or, you know, durable property.
Yeah, right.
That if it's protected, you have... What do you have? 700 million people that still aren't a part of the middle class? And American companies want in there. Growing markets is what you're always looking for. There probably isn't a better growing market right now than China. And so the president would be doing the people of China if they get a trade deal with China that looks anything like I think it's going to look like coming from the president, historians might look back at this and say this was one of the greatest deals, not just trade deals, but one of the greatest deals, treaties between two countries that changed the world. Because if you have much, much more of an integrated system of trading with China, there's less likely you're going to have tensions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you right now, in Russia, if Russia could get an economy off the ground besides just energy, and the United States and Russia could come to a deal, guarantee there'd be less back and forth with Putin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still amazed, because after the fall of the Soviet Union, I really believe by this time the tensions would be gone. The tensions aren't gone because Russia still isn't part of the Western economic world. That's how I look at it, because yeah, if they were, that right. lowers the tensions.
Well, and it does. It changes the mindset. Putin is an old school communist. What changes communism?
Capitalism.
Yep. Capitalism brings about a great wealth of freedom, really. Not just the actual wealth, but it brings about a great deal of freedom for individuals. And with that freedom comes property rights, comes many great things, but that just hasn't happened there.
China's in a predicament. We always said there would you would finally get to it when you allow capitalism in.
Yes.
You eventually have to make a decision of what direction you wish to go.
Right.
And those people that have been a part of capitalism for the past, 30 years in China has seen a huge growth in the middle class. If you take it away from them, you've got problems. And that's the problem that any communist state faces when they allow capital. Well, we're going to allow some capitalism in. Well, then what you do is you allow wealth in, and when people get wealth, then they acquire influence.
Yes.
It's just the reality of capitalism.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
A couple of headlines of stories out there. Ex-FBI lawyer, officials were quite worried that Comey appeared to be blackmailing Trump with the dossier. Also, another headline, dispute erupts over whether former CIA Director John Brennan and former FBI Director James Comey push the Steele dossier. They're going back and forth at each other on this now. What a turn of events yesterday.
Yeah.
From 2.5
yeah.
years of Trump-Russia collusion to now Obama, Clinton, Brennan, Comey. Russian collusion.
Wow.
Clapper. Russia collusion. It is, and as we have said before, when you actually break it down, if they were involved in pushing the Russian dossier, it means the top law enforcement and intelligence officials in the United States were pushing Russian propaganda and disinformation. That's mind-boggling. You want a scandal?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you for being here this morning. In talking about what happened yesterday, where Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said that they're very close to a deal to scrap the steel and aluminum tariffs, which is a good thing. And we said eventually they were going to have to do that. The discussion comes up about what actually goes on in the White House, and had some having some discussions on it during the top of the hour here. Just because of some input, people should know that when you look at who advises the president on trade deals, you have Peter Navarro, who is his trade guy, trade and manufacturing, presidential assistant on trade and manufacturing. Peter Navarro, he's a protectionist. He believes we should be protecting, the part of the president that talks about tariffs are good. That comes from Navarro. When you talk about, I'm trying to think, who am I missing here?
Lighthizer?
Oh, Lighthizer, yes. Mm-hmm. Lighthizer is the same way. Lighthizer is very much a protectionist kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Mnuchin, not so much. And I got mind blank here.
Kudlow.
Larry Kudlow. I don't know why I can't think of his name.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, isn't as much. And Larry Kudlow, who he brought in from CNBC, is absolutely a free trader.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have people advising the president on trade and the economy who have absolutely diametrically opposed opinions. And there's always been a fight inside the White House as to who would win. We still don't know. The game isn't over yet. And some weeks it looks like the protectionists are winning, and sometimes it looks like the more free traders are winning. In the end game, though, from what we can see, the free traders are winning inside of the White House. The free traders, for the most part, won in the USMCA agreement. Still very little tariffs, even in the New Deal, between the United States and Canada. Everybody, you know, on soft timber, a little bit here, dairy a little bit over here, but nothing compared to the amount of actual free trade that goes on between those two countries. The really modern Western countries don't tariff much at all. Even China doesn't tariff the majority of the products coming into into China, but they tariff enough. Their tariff rate is greater, but still it's not 100% of things coming in. It's not even 50% of things coming in.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably 7 or 8% coming in. But so you have this back and forth going on. Yesterday was a day that you could say that Larry Kudlow was winning, that the free traders were winning when Mnuchin announced that they're very close to scrapping the steel and aluminum tariffs against Canada and Mexico, and that they were delaying their decision on steel tariffs, or excuse me, not steel tariffs, automobile tariffs with Europe, the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
So that means somebody has gotten the message, they've had to because the president had to approve it, getting the message that the GDP is more important than the trade imbalance. Because if you look at this, not that the president still doesn't bring it up, it's almost as if the president, it's still part of his makeup, even though he doesn't believe it as much anymore, because once in a while, as he did last week, we're losing $500 billion. And then you ask, well, does the trade deal change that? If that's one of your big things, and the new trade deal doesn't change that. Just like the trade deficit between Canada and Mexico will not be drastically altered in any way except for natural, you know, trade going back and forth, whatever happens organically in the economy. But the trade deal itself doesn't address the massive trade imbalances. The trade imbalances, because there's an investment imbalance when it comes to this huge surplus of investment in the United States. Mm. As we've said before, people will say, well, we're losing it. The president says, you're losing it. Well, you're actually not losing it. There's two types of trade. Well, there's three types. Barter for barter. Durable good for durable good. Service for service. Service for durable good. Durable good for service. Or modern trade, which is you get the durable good or service, and in return, you get electronic or paper currency. Well, which one is better? Well, neither is better. They're all part of the trading system. The president views it that if you pay the money and get the durable good, that that's a loss for your economy. It is not the case. The president said that as recently as last week. If he believed that, then he wouldn't be negotiating the free trade deal that he's actually negotiating with China right now, or the deal that they negotiated with Canada and Mexico. If he believed that, they wouldn't be dropping the steel tariffs on Canada and Mexico, and he wouldn't be acting more friendly towards the European Union, which means the message probably is getting across to the president, and I say probably because you never know. Mm-hmm. Change his mind tomorrow. But it seems like the message is getting across to the president that economic growth, not the trade imbalance, is the number that matters. And this has been a trade imbalance president for 40 years.
Yeah. I think that right now there's probably good reason after the fallout with China last week in terms of the trade talks, that's the time, and frankly, it should have been all along that you shore up all of your other friendly trade partners, as we call them. That should have been the approach all along. All right, let's negotiate a better deal where we buy more of this or they buy more of whatever from us. Great. But the tariff thing didn't need to happen on that end. The threat of it didn't need to happen. Negotiations happen quite often without having that kind of threat or action. It's not, it just simply isn't productive. I think there's probably a lot of talk, or was last week, that you're going to have to, and we said it about the auto tariffs with Europe, you're going to have to shore up everything else, because the thing with China right now is likely more of a question mark than it has been in recent months. And it's likely because they don't want to change their laws. They really are at the crossroads. China's at the crossroads. If they start changing their own laws, and it would be related to intellectual property, if they start changing their own laws, they're changing their society. This massive communist nation is changing the fundamentals of a communist society by changing those laws.
Yes, you're right.
And when you do that, you have to think about the ramification, because you think about last year, them lifting term limits for Xi, going back to their old way of this guy can be president as long as we want him to be president, not we the people. There's no such thing as we the people. But they are in, as you pointed out earlier, a very precarious situation, because you can't roll back what they've already done when in terms of the capitalist environment that does exist in that communist society. That capitalist impact, you're not going to be able to roll that back. Well, you can't take that away.
And I think it's important that you bring that up, because to the United States, this is all about an economic deal. This is about making our economy better long term. In China, there's two purposes. It's to make the economy better, but not really great, because those in power wish to stay in power. And so we want the economy to be good. We want growth, but at the same time, we want to retain the communist government.
Right.
That's where capitalism, as we've said, capitalism needs to exist in a democracy. When I talk about a democracy, I don't mean a direct democracy. I'm talking about the umbrella of a democracy for the nitpickers out there, which includes a constitutional republic. And so when you decided, as I probably said this, I've been in talk shows for 30 years, so I've been saying it for 30 years, the day that China said we need to start allowing some capitalism in here in order to grow our economy, in order to stay in power, what they were doing for the long term was putting forth a plan that would eventually lessen their hold on the society. Because when the economy starts growing, people start acquiring wealth, they start acquiring material, land, they start acquiring influence. When people have money, then they want local governments to be more responsive to them. They want regional governments to be more responsive to them, and they want the federal government to be more responsive to them. China, as we've talked about, is also facing, as we have talked about, and other economists have talked about, is facing a point where now salaries are going up. Salaries are going up because regulation is going up. And now they have to worry about pollution because they have a massive middle class in the cities that say, my God, we can't, you know, we can't live in these type of polluted cities. So pollution control, all the expenses that we now have in a modern society, wages going up, expectations going up, pollution control, regulation, safety of the products, everything that happens when you become a capitalist society that does not exist in a communist society, where 99% of the people compared to a modern society are in abject poverty and you have much more control of them, you start losing the control all because they acquire wealth, which means they acquire influence.
Mm-hmm.
That's what China is facing. That's what China is facing right now. And so their decision is, do we have, and it was pointed out in the one article we read yesterday, do we want 6 or 8% growth or do we want 3 to 4% growth?
Right.
And by the way, their 3 to 4% growth isn't as great as the United States' 3% growth because of our per capita, because we're talking per person, you know, what you are producing. And so because they have, you know, they got, I believe, roughly between 300 and 400 million people that are in the middle class, which is huge. But they have, the majority of their country is not, which means economic growth actually should be faster. When you have nothing, economic growth grows a lot faster. Than when you get to a modern economy like ours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they face. There are huge decisions there, but part of the decision is political, not just economic as it is over here. It's how do you grow the... Now you can say with the Democrats talking about socialism, it does get political at times, but the main concern of the businesses and people overall, if you take the politics out of it, is growth. That's what we want. Growth is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
The politics really doesn't, whether it's a Democrat president or a Republican president, they still want growth. With the communist government, it's the Communist Party that wishes to stay in power forever, which changes the whole concept of a free trade deal.
Yes. And I do wonder how close they are to having a real agreement. Because, again, from our perspective, the U.S. has to have some kind of strong enforcement mechanism on those intellectual property rights.
I hope that, as we have advised the White House for the longest time, that the goal should have been to unite all the friendly trading partners against China, to isolate China from the Western trading world, and we mean the European Union, the powerhouse of North America, the United States, Canada, and Mexico, the European Union. Friendly Asian countries,
mm-hmm.
for example, renegotiating the TPP and getting back in that and having free trade with all of those countries also. And in essence, isolating the big economy that's cheating.
Yeah. And I wonder if that's what's going on here.
I hope that's the direction of where they wish to go. Let's mend all the wounds,
mm-hmm.
and let's now focus on, you know, if we all band together and you have if you have five of the six top economies going against one of them instead of just the United States isolating ourselves, you're more powerful. You have more economic clout to do the things that you want.
That's right out of the Larry Kudlow playbook, by the way. He talked about it his last day on CNBC.
Yeah, he did. Yep. Well, like I said, hiring Larry Kudlow was like hiring us. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Jamie in San Diego. Jamie, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
What was that?
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
You're on the air. I'll jump right into it. I'm going to bring it up now, but it's been something that's been just going on here. I'm usually on in the morning. I don't hear too much of this late night stuff, but it's the same drumbeat of, you know, right now it's China. China's in the mainstream. China's, you know, the big topic, Trump versus China, U.S. versus China. But it's communism. This has been a decades old, if not a century old, struggle of the idea of communism, Marxism, Stalin. this has gone on and on now for the past several decades. That is the main topic. This is a topic. The tariffs, this little stand that's being made, this absolutely has to be done. This has to come to a head. This is Western society. This is capitalism. Not even capitalism. It's Western society, the idea of personal individual freedom and the dignity of an individual human being coming to a head with the idea of a collective, the betterment of the good of the people at the sake of the individual person. This is something that's been coming to head for a long time and needs to happen. It's probably going to come to a war, to a physical war at some point. But
I think you're jumping, Jamie,
we're out of time.
Yeah,
thank you.
I think you're jumping the gun on war.
Yeah, I don't think on war. No. Could there be a stalemate on trade? Yes. Yeah. For the reasons that you pointed out, that's where we are, but not an actual war. I don't see that happening. Here's your forecast.
Precipitation that came onshore in the west yesterday as rain is developing as snow in the upper elevations of the Sierras throughout the day. And as we get into Friday, that's as much as 2 feet of snow expected in the California mountains above 6,000 feet. We will see rain and snow impact much of the inner mountain west over the next 24, 48 hours. Salt Lake City just on track to receive some rain. Same for Cheyenne, Wyoming, as daytime and overnight temperatures are too warm to support snowfall there. Denver 88 today and an overnight low of 53. Will not see more than rainfall in the Mile High City. Most of the southern third of the country over the next 24 hours will remain dry. That includes flooded areas of Texas and the lower Mississippi Valley as clear skies and warmer temperatures enter the picture. 86 and sunny in Dallas. Thunderstorms for Chicago, high 75. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Show that never stops. Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Mike in Seattle. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mike.
Hi, thank you. Yes, we made a tremendous deal with China, and they are acting like it's not a good deal. And they broke their word. And I'll give China a tip. The cup of strength for them is their word. And if they broke their word, like the president said, which I believe they kind of wavered, now we can make them rich, which is what we've done. And they want to get this president fired before they're going to change.
Hmm. Which president, theirs or ours?
Well, they would like to see the people turn on Trump, and it's not going to happen because he's way too successful.
Oh, okay.
And so, unfortunately, we're at this stalemate, and I would be as tough as we could possibly be with them.
Well, I think they have been. I would say though, I think that the deal that Trump has made them will make China a richer country overall long term, and will increase their GDP growth rate than the deal that the Chinese actually want.
Yeah. Right.
When you stifle competition within your own country, when you put on, look, it's like the, you know, when it's why the White House is close to a deal on dropping the steel tariffs and the aluminum tariffs, because it isn't an advantage to your country to do that. You hurt when you do that. Subsidies within your own country hurt your own growth rate. It's the opposite of what people think. When you get rid of competition, then what do you get? You get industries that are inefficient and non-productive. Your costs go up, and you hurt. That's one of the things that has been brought up about China. China believed that they could become an export economy. They decided to manage their economy as an export economy, And what did they do? They ignored what is normally the biggest part of any country's economy, which is domestic. The United States, roughly our domestic economy is 2/3 of the GDP. Our exports, our international trade is roughly 1/3 of our GDP. You can't lose 1/3 of your GDP. You know, this is where we've got, you know, when we have people call up and say, well, we should just trade within ourselves. No, you can't lose a 30-year economy. You saw what happened in the last recession. Did we lose 10% of our, did in the last recession, does anybody even know when you go into a recession how much of an economy, how much an economy shrinks? Did we lose 10% of our economy? No. Did we lose 5% of our economy? No. What did we lose? In that year period, if you look at the year, year and a half period, probably what? We contracted 2%?
Mm. Yeah, right.
And you saw the economic devastation that it does to a society. And so trade is extremely important, but so is competition. So is competition and having an economic system of capitalism where productivity grows. You can't grow productivity with subsidies. It's impossible.
Right.
Because you create more of a monopoly. You aren't forced into, because what creates productivity? Competition. And that makes your country stronger, healthier, and gives your economy the potential to have a stronger growth rate. And that's why I've said what the president has offered China is a long-term better growth rate. But the problem, the last caller said, well, China just wants to become rich off this president. No, they actually don't. The president makes the China and the people and the country itself richer long term. What the Chinese want is not necessarily a lot more money. The government, they want to stay in power with the money that they have and keep the growth rate where they feel they can manage it so the people are happy, but they can still retain power.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem when you are dealing with capitalism versus communism. They don't necessarily want an incredible growth rate to last forever.
Right.
They claim they do. Well, actually here's the point. They actually claim they want both, but you can't have it.
Well, it's an impossible balance.
Yeah, you can't have communism and an extremely rapid growth rate because you have put full capitalism into your economy. It doesn't work that
right,
way.
Right.
It's sort of like the when we talked about the delusion of people believing that government can keep spending money and we can keep borrowing more and more and more money, and government can keep spending more money, yet they won't take control of our lives.
Yeah, that you could have a huge, big government to provide, but not
an intrusive government.
And so that it is, I think we are at those, I think China's at those crossroads, but honestly, the world is. It's quite possible if the right deal is done with China in terms of trade, that is, it is one of those moments where we were chipping away at the cornerstone of communism in China. And that by doing that, we compromise the integrity of the communist government long term. We don't make predictions, but I mean, if you think of the potential here, it is quite possible that 20, 30 years down the road, this could be one of those moments where, and it may not happen in the same kind of words, but tear down that wall.
You know, that's one thing that we've had the discussion on the show a lot, but the discussion isn't, you don't hear it at all on the left when they talk about socialism. They never talk about the immorality of socialism and what you actually create with it. Mm-hmm. Not that it isn't brought up, but we really don't delve into that enough. And that's why we've said, when you look at what the president's doing here, the opportunity for the Chinese people long term to become more free.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the Chinese government fears. Chinese government, as every communist government fears, is the individual acquiring wealth. Because then when the individual acquires wealth, what happens? They acquire influence, but also when they acquire wealth, what good is that wealth if you can't experience freedom with it?
Right.
Money gives you the opportunity to do what? Experience everything that freedom has to offer. You then wish to control your own life. That's the problem that the Chinese government faced when they decided, okay, let's add a little bit of capitalism here, 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 here. Well, then it keeps growing, it keeps growing, it keeps growing. And then when you get capitalism, then you get people wanting government to be responsive to them. And how do you backtrack? How do you go back to the old, okay, nobody owns property anymore.
Right, go in and confiscate property. That's what you would have to do.
Right. Well, then everything crumbles upon itself again.
And their economy crumbles. And they, just like the Soviet Union, won't be able to stand because they won't have, they as a government, as a society, the communism wouldn't be able to stand because they won't be productive and the world would not cooperate as such.
The Chinese people's biggest adversary is not Donald Trump. It's the Chinese government. The Chinese people, their best friend right now, when it comes to their long-term success and quality of life, is Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is a better friend to the future of China and the Chinese people with the trade deal they're offering them than the Chinese government is.
Right. I mean, if you think about the potential here of what a real deal could do, if they are to change their laws, you're making a significant turn. It's not going to be overnight. It's not going to be on a dime, but it will be one of the fundamental moments in that. It will be the fundamental moment in that turn away from communism.
And that's the eventual goal, is quality of life and liberty, is it
right,
not?
Right, right.
I mean, that's what you're looking for, liberty, and then
yes.
The quality of life that comes after liberty. And by the way, there are people that think, because there are still the zero-sum people out there that believe that economies are zero-sum games. I mean, mm-hmm. liberals believe that all the time. Mm-hmm. But if China's economy, if they abide by the rules and they play fair and they move much closer to a free trade economy, it means closer ties to the United States, and it means a more successful, economically speaking, United States over the next 50 to 100 years, because you've got a market over there. Then, 700, 800 million? You got over a billion, but I'm talking about those that have not yet come in the middle class yet.
Right.
That you've got tremendous potential for the United States and many other countries over there. And then if you can open up the rest of Asia to free trade, it's huge.
It is massive.
And everybody benefits.
Right.
It's like we talk about in our economy, in the United States. And, you know, we'll get it once in a while. Oh, you guys in Texas, you guys are, you know, big braggarts and arrogant because your economy is doing so good. No, we're not. The last thing I want is California to not have a good economy. The last thing I want is New York not to have a good economy. The last thing I want is Illinois to not have a good economy, because it all relates.
Yeah.
If California's economy is great and Texas' economy is great, they help each other.
Take the cost of government out of those three states, those three massive economies, Illinois, New York, and California. It would be unbelievable.
Yeah, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not Texas does great and then New York doesn't. Doesn't work that way. If parts of the country are hurting, it hurts the economic growth in all areas of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But people believe it's a zero-sum game. There's only so much money to go around.
That's not true.
No, it's not true. Doesn't work that way. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, we will get to the all the incredible things that happened yesterday. I mean, I just looked at May 15th. I'll always look at May 15th, 2019, I believe, and say that was the big turn, because that was the turn when you had those in the Obama administration start looking to deflect blame on the others.
And they didn't, I don't think they realized
that they were doing it.
I don't think they realized what they were doing, the points they were making in deflecting the blame, and we'll get into more of that because they really confirmed a lot of things that people on the other side have been saying.
It was an amazing day that really got lost. I don't know why it got lost. Well, might have got lost because of the, you know, the potential, the abortion ruling, which is huge.
Right,
but still, that again, that passing in Alabama is still 6 months away and is going to go through the entire court system at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought for 2.5 years, when you're looking at news stories out there for this thing of Trump, you know, committed collusion and still what's going on, that, you know, the everything about William Barr. And it's almost as if the mainstream media is ignoring the substance of the actual evidence and what is going on in this case. It's completely turning it backwards to where we always said that those that accused the president of colluding with the Russians to change the outcome of the election, they were the ones that were actually doing what they accused somebody else of doing.
It really is amazing if you think about now where we are compared to where we were just a few months ago.
To the point that we're at now, after watching Trey Gowdy and the accusations going back and forth, that the belief now is that it is more likely, as Trey Gowdy said, that it's on Brennan, and this has been said for a while, that the head of the CIA, while the head of the CIA...
While in that position.
In the Obama administration, was part of the conspiracy of people to accuse the president of colluding with the Russians to hack the election, when he was actually pushing to legitimize Russian disinformation and propaganda that came from Russia intelligence in order to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 presidential election. That is just mind-boggling. And here's the point. The dots are being connected.
You know, it was interesting. You have the Attorney General traveling abroad, and he's, you know, he made a comment, something to the effect of, I got getting away from Washington to do the work of the Attorney General. It's trying to get hold of, essentially, they're trying to get some international cooperation to get some hold on and control over MS-13.
Right.
And so that's part of his trip. But when he said that, I thought to myself, yeah, because he was in the line of political fire. Remember, he was the bad guy in all this. Now he's handed it off.
Yep.
To Durham, and now he's out of the country, and you've got two on the other side going at each other, blame game in full effect. Wow.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.